We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We got to consider that.
It's embarrassing, but we are who we are. We're not a very good team, but we're 3-1 somehow, and we got all the voters fooled, thinking we're pretty good.
Jaworski Lane at 275 pounds showed a heck of a lot of athletic ability.
Welcome to a Week 13 recap edition of the RoadWire College Football Podcast, the Dan LeFever of College Football Podcast. Nick Whalen joined, as I always am, by RoadWire College Football guru of content, Jonathan McKechnie. John, we have a ton to get to beyond what was a fantastic rivalry week in college football that gave us some of the most memorable rivalry games, especially all on the same weekend that we've had in a really long time. So we'll get to, of course, Ohio State and Michigan. We will get to Wisconsin, Minnesota, begrudgingly. We'll get to Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. But I think we need to start with one of the biggest stories of the entire college football season, if not the biggest, which being somewhat of an off-the-field story involving Lincoln Riley now heading to USC, seemingly out of nowhere. I was at Lambeau Field yesterday for Packers-Rams, so I was kind of off my phone for most of the day. As always, you get like terrible reception in any stadium ever. And on top of that, John, on the way home, as I'm getting into my car to drive from Green Bay back to Milwaukee, I was wearing sweatpants because I had them under my second pair of pants that I had since taken off for the drive home. And as anyone who's ever worn sweatpants knows, if you keep your phone in your left pocket, when you climb into a car, it can create a situation where the phone will slide out of the pocket. That's exactly what happened. At the same time, I did not notice that this happened. I slammed the door shut and caught my phone perfectly, making like the worst crunching noise of all time. My phone like immediately short-circuited. Save for like 7% of the screen on the bottom that still lights up. It's just like a black screen with like really troubling lines going through the middle of it. But the phone itself still works. Like it's like, you know, I'm driving home and I'm like, I know I'm like getting text messages or getting updates on the Sunday night game. Cannot check them at all.
Oh, that's like almost worse in a way.
It was terrible. Yeah. It's like, I couldn't even shut it off. But I don't know how this happened, but like, you know, when you try to shut off an iPhone, you hold like the volume up button and the power button. Whenever I did that, it just started making like a police siren noise. It was like,
oh,
whoop,
good.
Whoop. I'm like, what is going on? Like, am I accidentally calling 911?
Yeah.
So I just had to leave it there, like, you know, buzzing every, you know, 20 minutes or whatever. And I'm a pretty big phone guy. I'm not shy about that. I like checking scores. I like being on top of things. So it was a very long, sullen drive home from Green Bay, but at least the Packers got the win. All this is to say, I really was not fully clued in on the Lincoln Riley news until I got home, got on my computer, and saw that college football Twitter was completely blowing up. This is an insane move, right? I mean, this is pretty much, at least in recent times, like unprecedented, right? For a coach to go from, you know, one of the top three or four programs in the country to obviously a program in USC that has a ton of tradition and has been on that hill, but hasn't been there in so long. I mean, Lincoln Riley has always done a really good job, I think, of deflecting, whether it's been NFL interest for the last 5 or 10 years. Or whether it's been other jobs like, you know, Miami, USC, LSU, whatever it is. And then he just, you know, makes this jump less than 24 hours after Oklahoma loses to Oklahoma State. I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say that this really did send shockwaves, I think, through the college football world. And I'm still trying to catch up and read as much as I can. And it's just a crazy scenario.
It's unbelievable, and the ripples from this are so significant because, you know, I think the only time in recent memory that like a coach from a big program kind of got hired away to another big program. I mean, I guess the Jimbo Fisher from Florida State to A&M is like close, but Oklahoma to USC is like a cut above that. And, you know, for Saturday night to happen the way that it did with Oklahoma, losing a close one to Oklahoma State, Lincoln Riley getting grilled at the press conference, like, you're going to LSU, aren't you? You're going to LSU. And he's like, I'm not the next coach of LSU. He answered honestly. He didn't necessarily say that he was going to be coaching Oklahoma for the bowl game or moving forward. He just said he wasn't the next LSU coach. He wasn't lying. But man, I thought that just the way that USC has been trending downward, they were going to be the one of all these schools with all these big schools with job openings this hiring season. USC was going to be the one that ended up disappointed, and instead they won it. And now USC is USC's back before they even play a game under Lincoln Riley. Like, this is so significant in my opinion. I think that he's going to be able to do things recruiting wise and helping re-solidify that kind of hold on Southern California talent in a way that obviously SC has not been able to do in recent years. And, you know, Clemson, Bama, Georgia, all these other schools coming in and poaching that talent from Southern California. I think it gets a lot harder when Lincoln Riley's there. And Lincoln Riley was doing an amazing job getting kids to Norman, which, I mean, Oklahoma is a good program and they should be getting five-star recruits and everything. But I think USC is an even easier sell for that kind of thing. And the way that he runs his offense, I think that marries up so nicely with what I think USC wants to do, and like kind of what you think of when you think of USC, an explosive offense and all that stuff. So this suddenly makes, you know, it puts another power back in the West that had been dormant for, you know, the better part of a decade, save for like the Sam Darnold Rose Bowl year. So this is crazy. And Oklahoma, man, this clearly has completely railroaded them. I mean, you look at all the Oklahoma Twitter accounts, recruiting Twitter, even their beat writers and everything, they're in full-blown panic. They don't know who they're going to get next. They've had to go the Barry Alvarez route and get Bob Stoops to coach the bowl game.
That's the best part about this. I read that he was in the meeting when they announced to the team that Lincoln was leaving. It's just like he's just like sitting in the back, like lurking, like, oh, yeah, I'm back.
just rubbing his hands together. He's like, all right, boys, saddle up. But, man, we've seen Spencer Rattler hit the transfer portal today. Theo Weiss, like right before we jumped on here, the receiver, he's in the transfer portal. We saw the number one quarterback in the 2023 class. He's decommitted. Like, a bunch of guys have stepped back from their commitments to Oklahoma now. So this, it not only impacts them for next year, but beyond. And, you know, people are asking the obvious questions, you know, does Caleb Williams try to follow him to USC? What happens there? And all of this right before Oklahoma is about to go to the SEC. You know, I don't think it's going to happen in 2022, but it's happening in the next couple of seasons. And they've completely gotten what was, I think, easy to consider one of like the strongest foundations of any program just completely crumble from underneath it. And I don't know how they're going to be able to kind of manage this on the fly.
Yeah. Yeah. The timing is really tough, obviously. For recruiting purposes. And as you alluded to, I mean, Malachi Nelson, Mekhi Lemon, DeAndre Moore, all top 25 guys, all decommitting from Oklahoma. And all three of those guys somehow are high school teammates. I mean, this is the most talent compiled on a high school team since, I would say, the Wrightstown Tigers up in Northeast Wisconsin in 2009, 2010. But you have to imagine, I mean, if you read the statements from those guys, it's like any statement that a 17-year-old kid puts out is always hilarious. But yep. I think Malachi Nelson's was like, I'm decommitting from Oklahoma, but I will not be reopening my recruitment. Like, what does that mean? You're just sitting this one out? Like, no, I think we know exactly what's going on here. Pretty good chance that all those guys who are from, you know, a USC area high school will probably end up with Lincoln Riley there. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting because as Oklahoma crumbles, like, USC seems to be building back just as quickly. You know, it's like all those pieces that are crumbling away from Oklahoma are like basically going directly to USC. And, you know, there's still maybe going to be a waiting period. It's not like they're going to be a 13-0 team all of a sudden next year. But, you know, you think of, like, didn't Saban go like 6-6 his first year? And then all of a sudden you're 12-1 the next year once that talent hits. I mean, it does feel like USC is now back on that kind of trajectory. And I think it's really frustrating. Like, one, if you're another team in the Pac-12. Two, if you're an Oklahoma fan. And three, like, USC has made so many slip-ups, like, year after year after year. You just continue to slip up. And all of a sudden, you kind of just luck your way into this. Like, it's like when, you know, the Lakers, like, LeBron James just decided he wanted to sign with the Lakers, despite the fact that they had made a decade's worth of terrible personnel moves. You just kind of get bailed out here if you're USC.
Yep. Yeah, it's amazing how that works and the draw of Los Angeles. And I'm friends with some people that run a Pac-12 specific podcast. Shout out the No Truck Stops pod. And yeah, their sentiments was pretty much in lockstep with what you were saying there, where they were enjoying USC just kind of being down and having to go through the laughing stock stages of a program, and they'd kind of become that in recent years. And now it's like, oh, well, that's over. So any sort of window that we thought we had open, if we're fans of some program in the Pac-12 South, or really the Pac-12 in general, I still think Oregon, as long as Cristobal stays there, not a certainty necessarily. It just feels like starting in 2023, this is USC's conference to lose.
So my last question to you on this, before we move to recapping the actual games from the weekend, how much of a chance is there in the back of your mind that maybe we're speaking in absolutes when Lincoln Riley has not even stepped foot on campus yet? And it kind of reminds me in some ways of the party that went on when Tom Herman announced he was going to Texas, and it was a lock. Texas was back. This was the greatest possible hire. And we know how that turned out 2 or 3 years later. Obviously, Lincoln Riley is more accomplished. I think there are a number of reasons that you'd feel better about him succeeding here. But, you know, it's kind of easy to forget in hindsight, like, how much of a lock Tom Herman being a success at Texas was and how much of a bust that ended up being. Like, is there any sliver of doubt in your mind that Lincoln Riley making this move could end up backfiring in any way?
I don't think so. I think that's a great question to round this out on. And, you know, obviously Herman, the way that he coached up, that, you know, he had such a big role in that Ohio State championship team, goes to Houston, that they kind of become like the first, like, truly, like, scary group of five team in the college football playoff era. And that, you know, they boat race Florida State in that one New Year's Six game. And you're like, dang, like, Herman's a stud. And then, of course, you thought that once he gets to cook with the ingredients at Texas, that it was going to work out. And it obviously didn't. You do kind of have to wonder with how Sark went this year, that maybe they pulled the plug too early. I don't know. Seems like that Texas has its own kind of bag of issues, and USC is not completely clear of that either. I think that they've got some, you know, stuff that you have to deal with out there as far as their administration, that it's probably not as fun as easy as Lincoln Riley completely having complete dominion over the Oklahoma program the way that he did. So it's a fair question to ask. And you know, we can't speak it in these complete absolutes, you know, without him having coached a single game or even run a single spring practice out there. But I think just with what he did as a coach at Oklahoma, and just, yeah, taking them to the playoffs almost perennially, you just kind of expected them to have a Heisman level quarterback at all times. I have a hard time thinking this is going to fail, but I guess with the USC and the way things have been there, you can't say that it is without a doubt that he gets it done there. Like, there is absolutely a chance that this doesn't work out, but I tend to think that this is about as good as it could have gone for USC, and I do expect them to end up being back and into being a national power here pretty soon.
It's going to be fun. I mean, unless you're a USC hater, obviously this is like a disaster scenario for you.
Yep.
but it's going to be fun. Like, it's going to mix things up. You know, it's kind of been status quo for Oklahoma these last 7 or 8 years under Lincoln Riley. And you know, this instantly becomes one of the top 2 or 3 storylines heading into next season. And it's just so hard to think of a comparison. It's like, obviously, you know, Nick Saban coached LSU and then he went to Alabama. Urban Meyer went from Florida to Ohio State, but there were stops in between. You know, it wasn't just, I'm coaching you here, and now 1 week later, I'm coaching you. You know, those don't really feel the same. I mean, like, in college basketball, we had Roy Williams go from Kansas to North Carolina directly. Like, that's probably the closest thing I could think of. But yeah, I mean, it just speaks to how big of a deal this is. Like, I don't think we're overstating it. It's going to be a really fun storyline to follow.
Yeah, it's insane. It's such a huge development. It was totally unexpected. I don't think that anyone thought that USC was going to be the ones that win the Lincoln Riley sweepstakes. And it's such a big deal that, like, Billy Napier getting hired at Florida yesterday is like a back page story, yeah, right, essentially, when you're breaking down what this weekend was.
So let's get to the game. Oklahoma State. We'll start here, and then we'll move on through the other big games of the weekend. Oklahoma State outlasts Oklahoma 37-33. Come from behind win. They score 13 points in the fourth quarter to take this one in Stillwater. Spencer Rattler did not play in this game. We saw Caleb Williams hold on to the job through the entire game, which has not been a lock these last few weeks. And of course, Rattler has since announced that he will transfer, although it seemed like that was probably coming regardless of whether Lincoln Riley was still the coach there. But a solid game for Caleb Williams, over 250 yards, three touchdowns, but on the whole, kind of outplayed by Spencer Sanders, who did throw two picks, didn't have the same yardage as Caleb Williams, but 16 carries for 93 yards and a touchdown for Spencer Sanders in this one. And, you know, we'll kind of keep referencing this, I think, as we go through Michigan, Ohio State, and some of the other big games this weekend. But Oklahoma State very much positioning itself to be knocking on the door. If it can beat Baylor in the Big 12 title game this weekend, still maybe need some help depending on how you view these scenarios, but sitting at number 5 in the AP, it could ultimately be a question of one loss Oklahoma State with wins over Oklahoma and Baylor versus undefeated Cincinnati. And, you know, the doomsday scenario, I think, and we talked about this off air, John, is Alabama beating Georgia in the SEC title game, meaning both of those teams are getting in, Michigan beating Iowa to probably hold steady at number 2 and get in, and then Oklahoma State beating Baylor to move to 12-1. So then you'd be looking at that one loss Oklahoma State scenario versus undefeated Cincinnati. If you're Cincinnati, that is not a position you want to be in.
No, you don't want any part of that. So that would make things really tricky on the committee. It would be the one of the truer tests to the committee about their true respect of an undefeated Group of Five team. And I don't know, it helps that they're playing Houston. Houston's good. That I think they only have one loss and it was to a Power Five team. And they've been really, really rock solid. I don't think they've gotten enough credit throughout the year, but, you know, it's still not the same as beating a Baylor for a Power Five championship the way that Oklahoma State is positioned too. So, yeah, if we see a scenario where those two SEC schools get in, it's going to make it. And then we see a one loss conference champ, OK State, then I think, yeah, if you're a Cincy fan, you have to be extremely worried that you get left at number 5 and you're on the outside looking in despite, you know, two incredible years. And you basically need to have two incredible years to get to this point as a Group of Five team. So it's not just the 1 year. That's just kind of the standards they have to go by. And man, it really sets up as a crazy one. And, you know, I think that Baylor has a chance to beat Oklahoma State. I think that Oklahoma State wins, but that's going to be a really, really good game. I don't think it's a guarantee that OK State wins this one. And that, I mean, it was such a war on Saturday night. I mean, they made these costly mistakes where you just thought that they were just letting the game completely slip through their hands. All these turnovers that were just so costly. The Presley dropped punt. All this stuff, and you're just like, oh my God, but they found a way to win. They scored those 13 unanswered in the fourth quarter to get it done, and yeah, super impressive. So that they have about as good of a resume as you could hope for a non-top four team right now, and they're definitely knocking on that door if they finish the drill on Saturday.
So I think the most exciting game of the week and the one that most people were looking forward to was the dreaded 11 a.m. kickoff between Ohio State and Michigan. I for one was glad to see Michigan get a win here. I have no dog in this fight. I don't really care who wins these games, but this is such a fun rivalry that, you know, even if you don't root for one team or the other, like, I just want it to be more equal. It's not fun when one team has won like 14 out of 15 or whatever it was.
Right.
So I was glad to see Michigan get back, kind of on the right side of this rivalry finally. And to do it in convincing fashion, you know, there was no caveat here. It wasn't like Ohio State was missing two of its three best offensive players, or there was some fluky block punt or something like that. Like, Michigan just walked up and down the field all over Ohio State for most of this game, and credit to Ohio State for answering a lot of those scores early in the game. But that Ohio State defense just could not get stops when it needed to in the second half. And Hassan Haskins, 5 touchdowns in this game. And it's not, you know, it's not like Michigan had a ton of huge plays. You did have the one, you know, big run by Corum. But other than that, it was just, you know, 5-7 yards every single play. And you're just methodically marching up and down the field. I didn't even think, yeah, I thought CJ Stroud played pretty well, almost had 400 yards. He had, you know, 4 guys for Ohio State had catches at least 25 yards. So those explosive plays were there. But at the end of the day, they just could not stop this Michigan team. And like I said, this was a really convincing win. I think this was more Michigan going in there and just thoroughly outplaying Ohio State than some sort of fluky scenario that results in Michigan getting a rare win in this rivalry.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like that game so delivered on the promise of, you know, what a 2-5 matchup should look like. And, you know, you get the snow going at the big house. It's completely bonkers in there. It was just so fun to watch. In addition to Haskins, I think that the big story of the game, and this guy might, you know, kind of be positioning himself to be the number one overall pick in April, is Aiden Hutchinson. I think I saw PFF say that he had 15 pressures in that game. Like that's just like setting up shop in the Ohio State backfield. And it's not like Ohio State had some sort of ragtag offensive line that people were worried about going into this game. Like they have guys that are going to get drafted off that offensive line on the left side and that tackle. So Hutchinson just was a complete game wrecker. And it goes to show, you know, like the old adage that like, if you can truly dominate the line of scrimmage, you can completely change a game. And it reminds me a little bit of what Ohio State did to Clemson last year, where they just, although Stroud was able to have a better game than Trevor Lawrence did against Ohio State last season, but you know, similar idea where if you just wreck that line of scrimmage and you get the quarterback off balance at least a little bit. Again, Stroud's numbers were good, but certainly not quite to where we saw in recent weeks, you know, being held to 8 yards per attempt, having just the 2 touchdowns, a far cry from what we had seen from him overall. And then, like you said, anytime that Ohio State would, you know, get something going through the air, or maybe get a score, Michigan would answer right back. The offensive line just totally whipped Ohio State's front seven, like up and down the field. They just kept getting those chunk yardage, like you said. And it was just a good, like, just like the epitome. Like if you look up a definition of like a Big Ten butt whooping, like that's kind of what Michigan put on them when they had the ball, as far as like, it's not explosive necessarily, but it's just like a mean, hard 6-7 yards every single time that they're getting the ball. Yeah. For Haskins to average 6 yards per carry over 28 carries is, that's impressive stuff there. And the long was just 27. So that just goes to show you that consistently he was picking up yardage and, you know, at a certain point, a defense just can't really do a whole lot about that. So Michigan obviously kind of put the game in its favor officially in the third quarter. Ohio State, but punch back in the fourth, but Michigan was able to answer. And yeah, Michigan, like, I don't think that they're going to win the Natty, but they have some serious ingredients though, especially on the defensive side of the ball with Hutchinson, especially.
I think the Hutchinson versus Kayvon Thibodeau conversation is officially on at this point. And I think that'll be interesting to monitor, you know, as the NFL draft approaches. But 3 sacks for Hutchinson, like you said, Ojabo had one as well. 4 sacks for the Michigan defense, 8 tackles for loss for the Michigan defense, 0 sacks for Ohio State, 0 tackles for loss for the Buckeyes. So that's really where the game was won. I will say I texted some friends that, you know, that we always chat college football with. And after McNamara threw that just horrific interception in the red zone or in the end zone, I was like, here we go. You know, Michigan needed to come down and close this out. They needed to finish off this drive, go up 14-0 to be in control. I thought that was what was going to change the game for Ohio State, and it just never came.
It never did, man. It was, yeah, that's the resiliency. That's like the stuff that you see. You know, I've referenced it a million times, I feel like, this season, but, you know, like when you're on kind of like the right side of an upset, you need to avoid those big mistakes. Otherwise, you know, the tide can turn so quickly. I talk about that A&M game where they got the punt blocked and Alabama recovers it for a touchdown. It's like, okay, like here we go. Like Bama's about to just pull away. Mm-hmm. And then A&M punched right back with that kick return for a touchdown. And like, it felt like, yeah, Michigan's ability to respond and to not panic what was really just such a key there, because other teams have, you know, we saw it with Michigan State the week before. The second they get punched by Ohio State, they immediately went down for the count, and Michigan just took it on the chin and kept going.
So I want to frame it this way now, and you know, Georgia coming off of another romp this week against an inferior opponent.
Awesome.
They are clearly the best team in the country. There's no question about that. It's been wire to wire, essentially. Are you relieved in any way that Ohio State is probably out of the playoff picture at this point? And Michigan now, of course, sets up for a battle against Iowa to officially seal its spot in the playoff. But I think a lot of people saw Ohio State as maybe the biggest threat to Georgia because of that explosive ability of that Ohio State offense. So with the Buckeyes out of the picture, does that make you feel any better about Georgia?
Yes.
Or now do you look at how Michigan played and say, man, this team can maybe be close to as physical as we are?
Yeah, those two teams have a very similar play style, just a defense, running the ball, not asking the quarterback to do a ton. But yeah, Ohio State, I think if you asked myself or any other Georgia fan, I think Ohio State presented the biggest threat. And, you know, that with the potential, at least I thought there was, we'll get to it, but, you know, I thought there was more potential if Georgia were to lose to Alabama and Georgia draws Ohio State in the first round or something. It was like, oh man, like they might not even, you know, get a win in the playoff as a team that had been the number one ranked squad all year long, just because I was so worried about the offense that Ohio State brings to the table with Garrett Wilson, with Olave, Smith and Jigba, Trevion Henderson. Like, that's so much to deal with. It would have been, I think that I might have, no, I was legitimately concerned about that as a Georgia fan. I think that Ohio State had those ingredients to potentially solve that Georgia defense. And, you know, Georgia hadn't really played a truly elite offense yet this season. So that would have been just a kind of a shock to the system. So, yeah, now that Ohio State's pretty much out of the picture here, I definitely feel a little bit more relieved.
Yeah, as you should. I mean, as good as Michigan looked, and they're going to be certainly a tough out, assuming they do get by Iowa. I think almost anybody would agree that you want to dodge that Ohio State offense if given the choice. So we saw Baylor take down Texas Tech 27-24 to clinch that spot in the Big 12 title game, where they will face OK State. Let's do Alabama-Auburn.
Yes.
While we're on the topic of the Dogs and the SEC.
I have a funny story about this.
Okay, please proceed.
Okay, so you know, I'm watching the Iron Bowl. I'm watching the early goings of it. I'm texting my friends like, God, Bama's about to just wipe the floor with them. And then, you know, the game continues on, and it stays really, really low scoring. You're like, maybe somehow that this is going to happen. Finley kind of hurts his foot, so he's already not a mobile guy, and he's kind of just stumbling around there on one leg. But Auburn's defense is just constantly hitting Bryce Young over and over and over again. You're like, man, like this is the type of game that this is exactly what would have needed to happen for this upset to occur. And when Auburn stopped Alabama on that 4th-and-2 with about 2 minutes left. So I'm back home in Maryland over the holiday. I invite one of my buddies over, and we're going to go out in DC later in the evening. So he shows up. This is the first time I've seen him since the pandemic. So I go upstairs, and you know, we're chatting. He's chatting with my family, and I'm completely stress free at this point. I'm like, oh my God, like Alabama just lost too. Like, this is so sick. And then I hear my phone, or I feel my phone buzzing, and I check it, and it's my friend from Tuscaloosa, and they're saying this stuff that is kind of open to interpretation. Like, what are the football gods doing? All this stuff. And then I don't really know what to make of that. And I just assume that they're just like lamenting the fact that the football gods have frowned upon Alabama on this day. I go downstairs to grab something before we head out, and it's 20-20 in the second overtime. I'm like, no, this couldn't have possibly happened. So I had a friend for me kind of fill in the gaps later in the night as to how Auburn blew that end of game sequence. I guess a running back went out of bounds. And that saved Alabama 40 seconds or whatever. And then it goes to show you how scary Alabama is, that they can literally be in like the worst possible position. Like, you have to go 99 yards to tie this game, and they're able to do it. That just shows that you cannot kill Bama until they are dead. Like that until the clock is at zero. And I've certainly been the guy that's seen that and lived through that before. And it remains true, even if this team from Tuscaloosa this year doesn't feel quite as good as it's been in recent years. It doesn't feel like that they're a cut below what they've been in recent years. But still, like that goes to show you that even if that's the case, they are still so dangerous when they're coached by Nick Saban. You have Bryce Young back there.
Yeah, I mean, much like Ohio State, you're not jacked up to play this team in the SEC title game, even if every indication is that Georgia is the better team and has proven to be the better team week after week. It's still Alabama, and you still know anything can happen. So I guess in some ways, like, my apologies to you that the Crimson Tide ended up winning and are still very much in this thing. But, I mean, this was such an ugly game. 26 combined tackles for loss between these two teams. Alabama had 15 tackles for loss and 6 sacks in this game. And Auburn on the other side took down Bryce Young 7 times.
Yeah, I mean, they were getting through that – I think Alabama had to bench one of their tackles at one point. Like, it was really bad on that Bama front. And that's how A&M beat them too. It was they were just living in that Alabama backfield. And I think that if Georgia does something similar, I think they will be able to win on Saturday. But Georgia, for their own right, has to get their offensive line figured out, because Will Anderson is like that game wrecker type. He's a different type of or plays a different position than Aiden Hutchinson does at Michigan. But yeah, he seems like the latest kind of like Alabama defensive freak show. I mean, a sack and three tackles for loss, and it felt like he even did more than that. Like the box score doesn't really reflect how just kind of impactful that guy was on a snap to snap basis. That guy is out of control.
So we saw LSU take down A&M, sending off Coach O with a win in his final home game, 27-24. The Kenny Pickett possible parade to Heisman finalist rolls on with Pittsburgh winning 31-14 at Syracuse. Clemson 30-0 over South Carolina. Michigan State beats Penn State at home, closing out like the weirdest season of all time for Penn State. somehow ending this season with a losing record in conference. I don't know what this, like, just a bizarre year for Penn State. Oregon held on against Oregon State. Are we missing anything of major relevance here?
A little bit of a Friday flavor here. UNC had a pretty legendary meltdown at the end of that game against NC State. I think NC State was down like 30-21 with 2 or 3 minutes left. Final score in regulation, NC State 34, UNC 30. So kind of a tough way for likely the end of the Sam Howell era at UNC to end. It was a bad year for UNC, who, you know, badly underperformed expectations, especially in a year where Clemson, for its own right, also kind of you know, dropped off. Everyone kind of just assumed that Clemson was going to have another bye to the playoff yet again, and that, you know, even if they were to lose to Georgia, it wouldn't really matter for them. But they're not even playing in the ACC championship game. And then the Nebraska-ing that happened on Friday afternoon was truly, truly remarkable. 19 unanswered points in the fourth quarter for Iowa to for them to come back after, you know, Nebraska takes a 21-9 lead into that one. And they were crushing. Like, I thought Nebraska looked good, especially with no Adrian Martinez. I was like, oh man, this is kind of like, I might buy some stock in Nebraska for next year. And no.
I would always advise you against doing that.
you are my stonks advisor for college football teams to invest in. So thank you, sir.
Wisconsin loses 23-13 to Minnesota. Just crushing, awful, awful game. I thought this was – I'm trying not to, like, be too hyperbolic, but I think this was Paul Chryst's worst game in a long time at Wisconsin. The Badgers at one point in this game threw the ball – or dropped back to pass, I should say, on 16 consecutive plays. And it's not like – this was not like a super late game scenario where you have to be stopping the clock and all that. Like, they just completely abandoned the run in this game. You know, a couple of those ended up in Graham Mertz scrambles that went essentially nowhere. But Braylon Allen got banged up. I think it was the first or second drive. He kind of got his ankle twisted. Oof. And didn't look the same the rest of the game. And by the end of the third quarter, they just completely abandoned that. And Graham Mertz, I thought, went a little rogue. You know, it's like 3rd and 3, and you're throwing like the Aaron Rodgers deep ball down the sideline, which just failed over and over and over and over. He finished 21 of 38, 171 and a pick. But really, at the end of the day, I thought the Wisconsin defense was the bigger letdown here. Like, the offense obviously putting up 13 points is a disappointment, but in some ways it resembled that Ohio State Michigan game where it's like repeatedly you have, you know, you absolutely need this stop on 3rd and 3, and all of a sudden that the tight end is running free for a 20-yard gain. And that just seemed to happen over and over and over. Minnesota had, 4 different players had receptions of at least 27 yards in this game. No Wisconsin player even had a 20-yard reception.
My goodness. Yeah, that to me was one of the more surprising outcomes on Saturday. I cannot believe that it went down that way. I really felt like that Wisconsin was playing well enough over the later part of the season to where it's like they're going to give anyone that they face in Indianapolis a hell of a game. They might not win it, but it's going to be a war. And now we don't even get to see that. Like the fact that this was so costly as far as winning the West, it's just such a bummer. Like I do still feel in my heart of hearts, and that again, I am like a Wisconsin well-wisher and everything. So like that, there is a little bit of that, but I do feel like Wisconsin, when they play their best, is the best team in the Big Ten West. And it for us to not be able to see that, and for an Iowa team that kind of gets by on smoke and mirrors to be the one that comes out of it, it's disappointing.
I know. I got a big Milwaukee Friendsgiving coming up on Saturday night with a bunch of my buddies from UW coming over for that. Like the whole thing was like, all right, we'll have a nice dinner. Everybody will be here. We'll watch the Big Ten title game. Now we're going to be gathering around to watch a Michigan-Iowa game instead.
What a rug pull that is. I'm sorry. Well, at least you still have Friendsgiving. That'll be fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nonetheless, at least so we can all commiserate together.
We got a big squad descending upon Atlanta this weekend. I don't know if too many of us are going to the game, but we're already scouting out establishments to go to. I'm using some PTO to just take the day and enjoy myself. And man, I am so excited. I'm going to be a grown man barking in public on Saturday. I can't wait.
Oh man, well, I cannot wait to preview that week. And honestly, it's a good time to be taking PTO if you're John McKechnie, because what we only have like what 10 total games or something that on Friday and Saturday.
Yep, I wouldn't do it if it was going to be a crazy day, but yeah, it'll be manageable for the guys at RotoWire HQ. So have no fear, listener. The coverage will be as quality as ever, even if I've stepped aside for a brief moment. But yeah, it's totally manageable. And man, I'm so excited for Saturday. I'm like giddy.
Yeah. Shout out to Chris Benzine and the boys holding it down on Saturday.
Holding it down.
Football news. Georgia opens as a 6.5-point favorite, of course, in what should be a neutral game against Alabama. So enjoy that one, man. I will still find a way to enjoy watching the Big Ten title game. We got a full pack slate on Saturday, starting with Big 12 at 11 a.m. Central. Georgia Bama, of course, mid-afternoon, as always. Then Big Ten and ACC get the nightcaps on Fox and ABC, respectively. So we'll break all those down later this week. Looking forward to it, buddy.
Yes, sir.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.